Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The next committee that will meet will be the Ordinance Committee, and that is able to start now. And as Chairman Howe mentioned, we will be talking about the school's application at the start of the full City Council meeting later tonight at 7 o'clock. Next up is the Ordinance Committee. Thank you.
Everybody hear me? All right, I see nods. Good. All right, so the committee members, so we should be good. Ordinance can convene at 6.05 p.m. First item is acceptance of minutes from January 19th, 2022. Do we have a motion?
Move to accept. Oh, I see Councilman Lattiser has his hand raised.
We can't hear you, Councilman Lattiser. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. For some reason, it wouldn't let me unmute. Chairman, did you want to go to the committee first? Or
this is just the minutes. We haven't gotten to the item.
Oh, yet. I'm sorry. I just wanted to speak on the item. Sorry.
Got it. All right, so we have a motion. Do we have a second on acceptance of the minutes? You're muted, Jim.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Next, we have PCO 39-21, an ordinance in regards to amending Section 2-19 of the Warwick Code of Ordinances relative to the sale of city-owned property. This would be second passage. This is Council President McAllister on behalf of Mayor Picozzi.
Thank you very much. This is for second passage. I do believe that Mr. Walsh has something. We do need to clear up some language here. So if it's to the chairman's pleasure, if we could have Mr. Walsh walk us through that.
So Solicitor Walsh.
Thank you, Council President and Mr. Chairman. After communications with the city planner and having merged in a bunch of different languages to the revision here, there was some oversight that we need to clarify. And this suggestion is for page 2, line 5, following the word value, comma, insert the words staff shall obtain, and later in that sentence to change the word from to for. So the sentence would then read, should multiple highest bid offers be of identical value, comma, staff shall obtain a second round of sealed bids from the said highest offers for the next available meeting of the committee. So this is just to clarify the exact verbiage about what happens when two people bid the same identical thing. And just it's cleanup language.
So what's the line numbers for that?
This is all on line 5 of page 2. This amendment would knock it back to first passage. But if the council members were amenable to not further delay the item any further later tonight, if, you know, favorably passed, it could be requested by someone to put it up for unanimous consent for the second meeting to limit the amount of delay further.
Alrighty. Any questions or comments from members of the committee?
That sounds fine to me.
All set.
All right. So Councilman Lattiser.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. That was actually one of the questions I had. Another question I have is strictly on from a housekeeping. I'm not sure if it's pertinent or not, but on line 3, it says, the envelope shall be kept sealed until opened by the City Council Public Properties Committee. Should it state at a regularly scheduled City Council meeting? Because as I look at this, it just says by the City Council Public Properties Committee. Does it need a further clarification?
Any meeting of the City Council Properties Committee would need to be posted in compliance with the Open Meetings Act. And so if the issue is about making sure that there's availability, I think if limiting it to the normally 2 meetings a month, you know, if there was some urgent need to expedite this between meetings, that type of change would limit when you could hold that committee hearing. So I think the flexibility that's offered while still having the protections that the public meeting process would be regularly posted in compliance with open meetings is a safeguard to that effect. But it's up to all of you.
All right, that makes sense to me. So if by chance for any committee for that matter, but in this case, the Public Properties Committee, if the committee should call for a special meeting, that meeting would be posted, they would vote on this, then it would have to come back to the full council anyways, right?
Any action on this would flow through the full council. This would be the opening of the bid process, which similar to how purchasing handles other things, or even historically we've had committees meet on alternate nights for different reasons. So I think the language is drafted gives you the most flexibility without taking away any public safeguards.
Makes sense. It actually starts at the end of line 6. It says a minimum deposit of 20% of the assessed value according to the tax assessor record shall be tendered to the city along with execution of the purchase and sales agreement. Is that deposit, is that a non-refundable deposit if this thing falls through? Or I guess to expound on it, should it be a non-refundable deposit?
I can answer that the language is not drafted to be such, and I would defer to the planner, Tom Kravitz, if he's with us to further clarify the requested intent of the item.
I mean, I think it's a question that needs to have an answer. Is this deposit refundable or not refundable? Because in line 14, it says prior to closing, the city shall obtain an appraisal at the expense of the purchaser, and the purchaser should also submit a title report to the city. So if something falls through on whatever and the potential buyer wants to walk away, do they lose their deposit?
Mr. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I can, okay. Sir.
Hi, Mr. Lattiser. It's Tom Kravitz.
Hi, Director. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
Good question. We could come up with a non-refundable deposit that's a smaller number in the P&S. So I think now that you bring it up, I don't believe this is meant to be kept. 20% is a pretty big number, so.
Mm-hmm. So is it your feeling that wouldn't be necessary to protect the bidding process? I know, again, in my world, that happens all the time. You want to bid on a job and it requires a deposit. It's a non-refundable deposit. So, I mean, if you're comfortable with it and you think that it would be a disadvantage to the city, then I'll listen to it.
Yeah, I think the intent was to weed out or entertain the more serious bidders, to give you a 20% deposit. It can be refundable, but they still got to give the money as part of their bid. I think that helps us weed out the ones who are maybe not as serious or have the means. That was the intent. And again, we can put in a non-refundable deposit, certainly, if we enter into a P&S.
So back to line 14, if you had a certain portion, if not the whole thing, a certain portion non-refundable. In other words, if the bidder all of a sudden gets cold feet, or they find out that, which happens all the time, I made a mistake on this price. I'm way off on this bid. I can't do this, that kind of money. And then they walk away. Now we have to start the process all over again, which is a pretty significant expense to the taxpayers. That's where my thought process is going with this. Because
that makes sense too, right? You don't want someone to put in a high bid with the deposit just to retract it all. Maybe we do pick a smaller percentage and make it non-refundable. I'd be fine with that.
I mean, bear in mind, the purchase and sales agreement usually is where you have clauses in there to prevent people from turning around and bailing. Once you sign that, that's when, that's like your last chance to have your misgivings, really, before there are consequences. If you, turns out you mess something up, it's like, okay, well, you can back out, but now the PNS lays out the consequences for doing that. That's what I'm used to seeing anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that, Chairman. But in this case, we're proposing an item here, we're proposing an ordinance here for not just one particular contract, for future contracts. And it doesn't necessarily mean, the way it's written now, it doesn't necessarily mean that if we agree that it would be prudent and in the best interest of the city and the taxpayers to have some sort of a non-refundable deposit, a portion thereof, if it's not in here, it doesn't mean that it's going to be included in the purchase and sales agreement. Right. And what we do know happens quite regularly, and I'm not asserting that it's happening in our community, but it happens often in the bidding world, whether it be the public or the private sector, where people come in and they put in bids, and then for whatever reason, they decide, I can't do this. Now, we have to start all over again from scratch, and that's costing the taxpayers money. And this is why hopping on this item of, it could be the whole deposit is non-refundable, or what the anticipated cost would be to go out and redraft it, repost it, rebid it, rehear it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, Mr. Lattiser's right in a sense where by the time we get to the PNS process, you know, it's going to take some effort to get to that point. We select the highest bidder. You wouldn't want someone to pull out just before the PNS process.
The document costs money.
Right. So I'm running some numbers on like 2%, even if you did 2% would be non-refundable, might be good.
So who do you want to be paying the deposit? Just that one serious bidder, Councilman Lattiser? Or do you want all the bidders to be putting it in?
Well, I would say that all of the bidders would have to, according to this, would have to put in a minimum deposit of 20% of the assessed value. But only the potentially, I don't know exactly how to word it, the potentially successful bidder would incur the non-refundable deposit. If someone bids this job at whatever numbers, just lower or higher than everybody else, obviously they're not in the running, so they're out. But if Councilman Sinappi bids and Councilman McAllister bids and Ed Lattiser bids, and we have three bids out there, Councilman Sinappi, his bid is he's the most qualified bidder, so it's his action that we're looking for. The other two guys, they're dismissed by the city, and they certainly should be entitled to a full refund of their deposit. Only the bidder that is the potential successful bidder should incur that feet to the fire thing. Because if they walk away, we could very well have to start all over again.
So why don't we just have it so that it says what it says right now, but then if your bid is selected by the city council, your deposit, either in whole or in part, whatever we decide upon, becomes non-refundable. That way it doesn't we don't have to wait till it gets batted back to them. Cause then to your point, they could say, you know what? We changed our mind. At which point we get left holding the bag.
And we've had that. We've had that recently, where for whatever reason they've changed their mind. So, yeah, I mean, that's fine. I'm looking for guidance on the language and, Director Kravitz, what you would feel would be a fair percentage, 2%, it might be a lot or it might be, nothing. Perhaps a percentage would be appropriate with a minimum return, something of that nature there. I'm not trying to complicate this, but I am trying to protect our pocketbooks here.
Yeah. It certainly makes sense, though, unless there's an issue from the legal side or from the city side.
It happens all the time in the private sector.
I mean, we've seen it with us, as you mentioned, a few of the bids that came to us recently, just normal bids, the various departments came back and said, hey, that person backed out. So now we have do it again.
Exactly.
And Councilman Ricks?
Thank you. So I have a few concerns here. For starters, I had some concerns about even the 20%, but considering that we are looking for serious bidders when it comes to these purchases of public properties and the like, I can see how the 20% is warranted. I'm not going to pick a fight over that. We'll see if it works, and if it doesn't, then that's something that can be addressed. I do have some concerns that when we're not only pairing that 20% with the non-refundable, all before we even get to the purchase and sales agreement, with the purchase and sales agreement, that should happen very quickly after those bids come in. I'm not saying it should happen the next day, but really this is all something that should be able to be taken care of inside a month, less than a month, because by the time we get to that point, we're putting this all out to bid, we should have our own purchase and sales agreement drafted by that point. This is also going to be an ordinance that's going to govern a number of different situations, whether we're talking about a sale of a property that might be worth $100,000, might be worth a couple million dollars. So asking folks to put down 20% in some of those cases is going to start to scare away potential bidders, which makes things less competitive. Then stating that before we even get to a purchase and sales agreement, it's going to be non-refundable if you are the bidder who is selected. That's going to be a further deterrent. This is, and we don't need more deterrents. I recall with the old Christopher Rhodes building, that that building had become a blight on the neighborhood, and we had an excellent planning director, and we do have a new excellent planning director. But speaking as to what was happening back at that time a few years ago, it became very clear that the city was not getting competitive bids on, or able to get competitive bids on, the tear down, the demolition of that building. And so really we had to end up going through Fisher Homes, who was able to attract more competitive bids than the city, because these demolition folks didn't want to deal with the whole process through the city, not without padding their numbers quite a bit, and we couldn't get competitive bids. That all got worked out because we presented the two different options to the successful bidder, Fisher Homes. The two I lost if Fisher Homes, take care of the demolition and assume all the risks. And here's the cost to you, Fisher Homes, if the city takes care of the demolition and all of the risks. And of course, Fisher Homes was able to come up with, they preferred the bid that involved them taking care of the demolition and all of the risks associated with it. And it really was a win-win for the city and for Fisher Homes. But we're not going to be presented with that kind of win-win opportunity when it comes to the initial sale of these properties. And it's already very difficult for the city to get a bidding war, so to speak, on these properties. We don't want to be taking extra steps that reduce the competition here. So for those reasons, I think that this really is something that's better left for the purchase and sale agreement contract process, where if we're talking about a property that's selling for, say, $2 million, just making up a number, then having a $400,000 non-refundable deposit, that's going to scare away a lot of potential bidders, and we're not going to be able to get that property sold for nearly the price that it should rightfully be sold for. Then you also have to look at the legality of that in those different contexts, where it might not be enforceable because the $400,000 would be well in excess of whatever it would be to recoup the city's costs at that point. At the same time, we can't just throw in some loosey-goosey language of in part or in whole. That's just going to confuse people. Effectively,
just correction, in whole or in part wasn't meant to be language that we put in. That was meant for the sake of discussion as far as the number. And bear in mind, Councilman Lattiser made it clear he didn't want the whole deposit being non-refundable. He said a small portion. In fact, he emphasized small, and so small that it would just be for the cost of doing the RFP and whatnot, again, not making a profit off of it.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. But at the same time, I think that having that as part of the bidding process itself, as opposed to something that would come into play with the purchase and sales agreement, I think that that really would be the better approach here. I'll also just say that in my own private practice, I do have some experience handling security deposits, dispute issues in the real estate context, and those cases can get pretty messy. We don't necessarily want to complicate things too much more than they already are. I can just imagine where if it's a situation where, okay, if the selected bidder selected based on highest bid of any bidder who is qualified, well, even that can create its own loopholes where, okay, that bidder wants to get out of the contract. Well, now all they have to do is make sure that they're no longer qualified. So really, this is all part of the process where just having that built into the bidding phase, I could just see how it could go wrong in a few different ways and not be effective. And really would be better left to the next step with the drafting of the purchase and sales agreement, so that this really could be tailored to the specific sale of the specific property.
Solicitor Walsh, I know you unmuted yourself. I'm not sure if you had something.
listening to the conversation, I'm curious if there's a solution that provide some enabling language in a follow-on sentence that says something to the effect of, the city may establish a portion of such deposit as non-refundable in this purchase and sales agreement for non-performance. So you have this, and if you look at the prior sentence, it says a minimum deposit of 20%. So we're not even establishing a absolute figure in the ordinance of how much, other than we're setting a floor on what the deposit shall be. And so I think as you engage in these purchase and sales agreements, the final form may, you could use your own discretion as it relates to the type and nature of the transaction or asset that you're contracting to come up with what would a reasonable non-performance fee be. And so I pose that to the council, if that's something of their interest for me to try and finalize some verbiage for.
Is there anything stopping bidders? So let's say the bid gets opened and now everyone, public bidders, can see what everyone actually bid for the project. Is there anything stopping the winning bid from, having seen the other bids, deciding, you know what, looks like I'm screwing myself with my bid, I'm out, and incurring no consequences, assuming it's before the PNS? Because I don't know of a consequence, although I'm by no means an expert in public property purchase and sales. So unless I'm missing something, that's my concern. And I think Councilman Lattiser pointed something similar out, if not identical, because it also can allow for some shady practices from bidders if they just want to see what their competitors are thinking as a general matter. But Councilman Lattiser?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I mean, your point is you know, taken, and it is true. So first of all, I just want to say that as Councilman Ricks made the statement that a bidder could disqualify himself as not qualified. I disagree with that. The city is the one that selects the most qualified bidder. So the city is, in fact, the one that's going to determine whether or not A is more qualified than Z, not the bidder. They don't have, you know, that option to say, I just realized I'm not qualified, I'm out. That's not the way it works. But in this industry, the home building industry, the construction industry, the remodeling industry, et cetera, this is often a common practice of a non-refundable deposit. And as I stated earlier, I'm certainly not looking to, I'll use Councilman Ricks's example, someone who's going to bid $1 million project, they're going to come up with $200,000 and then decide that for whatever the number's wrong, they want to walk out, they get hammered $200,000. No, it's not what I'm looking for. I think that would be referred to as unjust enrichment. I think there's laws pertaining to that sort of thing. What I'm speaking to is to protect the taxpayers' dollars, to protect our staff's time to do all these things. Instead of going back off for a rebid because someone doesn't like the number they bid based upon what the competitive bids are and they walk away, our staff, instead of redoing that that bid, could be doing something else that's more productive to the city. And if you're going to bid on a job or a project or a building, and you're going to put up $200,000 as a deposit, $200,000, well, I can tell you this, if there's a clause in there that says there'll be of that $200,000, $5,000 will be non-refundable if you walk away from this job. Or for some reason, we find out that, guess what? They're not in good standings with the Secretary of State. There's various reasons that will waste our staff's time if you don't hold these things to the fire. So I think that's very reasonable. I would certainly depend upon our staff, Director Kravitz, whomever else is involved in the process, to be able to assess and apply a number that is non-refundable to the potential successful bidder. We can't be wasting time with that. We don't have staff to do the things that we need to do now. So I don't think it's a deterrent at all. It doesn't stop me. When I bid a job and I bid a job that's non-refundable deposit, guess what? If I don't like the job or I don't feel comfortable in my number, I'm not going to bid the job. It's not the fact that the deposit is non-refundable. That doesn't scare me, because if I didn't want the job, I wouldn't bid it in the first place. And if I'm going to bid it, I'm bidding it with the intentions of winning. So I don't worry about non-refundable. There's no issue. I plan on winning this bid. Those are the people that we want bidding. We don't want people bidding on things. And I'm not saying it occurs in our world, but in my world, yeah, that happens often. People will bid jobs just to get a handle on what their competition is doing. And I don't think that we should be wasting taxpayer dollars in doing that going forward. So some monetary amount, which again, I would defer to Director Kravitz as to what he feels would be a reasonable number for the cost of putting together and following through the process of an RFP. But this needs to be done before you get to the P&S. You get to the P&S, it's too late.
So, Director Kravitz, do you have any issue with this concept?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I was just looking at like Wix, for example, on the GIS. If you take all the buildings and the value, it's let's just call it 250. It's not quite that much, but if you did 2% on 250, it's $5,000. It's totally reasonable. I just think if you're going to do this non-refundable, make it obviously not 20, but like 2% seems to work in that situation. And I would agree with that. Yeah. Director, I agree with Mr. Lattiser.
Director Kravitz, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, to Director Kravitz. So are you comfortable that a $5,000 number would adequately compensate the city and protect taxpayer dollars if something fell through and we had to go back out on this altogether? Is $5,000 a good average number?
I think it's a good number. Yeah, I think it's high enough where serious bidders will consider it, and they'll all submit checks for $5,000 with their bid. So the highest bidder, it'll become non-refundable to them. I assume that it's going to be rolled into the purchase price, right, with the P&S as we execute it. And all the other bidders who are lower than that get their money back, of course.
You know what, Director, I wouldn't roll, if I were bidding on it, I wouldn't roll an extra $5,000 into it. Because, you know, on a $2 or $3 million project, $5,000 may or may not be a big deal. But on a smaller project, that could be the difference between winning and losing. So, again, if I'm going to bid the job for $500,000, I'm going to bid it for $500,000 because I know I can do that job with $500,000 and make my margins at the end. I'm not going to factor in $5,000 because, you know, I may walk away from this. I'm not going to waste my time bidding it to walk away from it.
Are you saying that all the bidders should put in a non-refundable deposit then?
No. I'm just saying
just all the bidders,
all the bidders, they need to understand when they're bidding on these projects that if they're just doing it as a fact-finding mission, or they for some reason discover after the other bids came out, as the chairman had stated, oh, wow, you know what? Everybody else is at $200,000 and I'm at $500,000. Forget it. I'm leaving. See you later. That's what I think we need to protect ourselves from.
So, Solicitor Walsh, can we add in a line under subsection C, just make it subsection C1, and just have it say something along the lines of no less than 2% of the deposit or no less than $5,000 will be deemed non-refundable for the bidders selected as the highest qualifying bidder by the city council?
Certainly there's some discretion here that the committee and the council can undertake. I'd say the more deference you give to the departments to establish, one, whether or not it's needed for a particular bid, or two, to what extent is reasonable, I would think that providing such enabling discretion to set that amount may be of interest rather than putting a specific amount down.
Do you have an example sentence that you'd like to shoot up?
If you give me one moment, I will.
That any bid we do has a cost to the taxpayer, and has an impact on the administration, because time is money. You know, if they spend 5 or 6 hours on a bid, that's money. That's costing us money to do that.
Putting out that RFP ain't free.
I'm sorry?
Putting out an RFP is not free.
Exactly. You know, everything that goes along with it, the preparation, the paper, the stamps, the posters, the envelopes, you know, our staff's time, overhead, benefits, pensions, et cetera, all of these things have to be factored into the cost of that book of business.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if you would indulge it, I think that's something that we can clarify some language with and have a sentence tightened up and ready for later in the meeting this evening. For the full council to consider. And that gives us enough time to stay on track with the other committees while we formulate that. But I certainly am not looking to curtail any discussion on this item or, you know, end it now. I'm just saying we can definitely create something that matches what you've discussed in the time being without delaying the other portions of the evening.
I like that better than having to rush through a sentence that might not be ideal. But does any other members of the council wish to discuss this at this time? Do any members of the public have any questions or comments on this? I'm not seeing any hands raised in that regard. So, Solicitor Walsh, how would we proceed? Would we move to approve the, just for discussion to move this forward?
If you move Fable to the floor for discussion, we can revisit the specific amendments that's already been addressed and formulate that later this evening.
All right, so I'll move the item forward for discussion to the full council.
Second.
Made and seconded, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that would conclude Ordinance Committee, I believe, unless I'm mistaken. Lynn, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But if not, we conclude at 6:40 p.m.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'm going to ask that we go to the Appointments Committee. We have a member of the public who is here for his appointment and would like to bring that up here. So if there's no objection from members of the Appointments Committee, we will go to the Appointments Committee at this time. And Councilman Gephardt is the chair. So, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Let's get my ducks in a row here. Do we have all of our members? We do. All right, so the time is now 6:41. Appointments Committee comes to order. First up is the acceptance of minutes from the meeting on January 3rd. Do I have a motion?
Move to accept.
Second.
All right, moved and seconded, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, our first appointment this evening is to the Historical Cemeteries Commission, the Honorable Francis Flaherty.
Mr. Chairman, this is going to be a very friendly coup here.
The internet works better here than it does at my house.
Welcome, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Back in the corner office.
Yeah. Same seat, same chair, same desk. You haven't gone overboard on mayor's furnishings.
Well, this is you are up for consideration for a considerably different role this evening.
Yes.
Hopefully the mayor's tool belt is hanging just on the wall there, and you may need a rake and some lawn.
I need a rake. Yeah.
but very very nice to see you, and very very good to have you here.
Thank you. Please.
Do I have any members who'd like to speak on this appointment? Council President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Your Honor, thank you very much for being with us tonight. And I hope you were able to find your way back to City Hall. I bet you didn't have to use the GPS or anything. So.
You know, I can see City Hall from my house. So
I
lost too easily.
Yes, as a proud Ward 7 resident, so thank you very much. And you've had many titles, and I'm sure you'll tell everybody that being a councilman from Ward 7 is your favorite, and something that you're very proud of.
I would be very proud of it, but actually, I was a councilman from Ward 6.
That's right.
Yes, and I moved. After.
I won't hold that anymore. Now I got to rethink
my support. I always thought I did a good job,
tonight.
But not. Kind of job that has been done by the incumbent for these many, many years. She's done a
yeah. Well, thank you. Well, I just want to just thank you very much. This Historic Cemeteries Commission is a commission which I believe you, as the mayor, were the first one to implement that. Is that correct?
Yes. I think in 1988. I think it was 88. We've formed the commission.
I think that's incredible that not only did you start it and here you are, you want to be on that commission. This is a workers' commission here. I have participated in many cleanups at Brayton Cemetery and different cemeteries in the neighborhoods. And I've been there with members of the council, with Mayor Picozzi, raking and pulling weeds. And, we get the big dumpster out there and bringing it in. So I just really want to commend you.
I know what I'm getting into with it. I do know what I'm getting into, but I think it's important. I think it's important work. I think it's important for the cities and towns to do this. You know, we have Revolutionary War veterans and Civil War veterans buried in them around the city. I'm looking forward to it.
That's great. And I just want to commend you of all your service that you've done to for the city and the state And now it's continuing, and it's continuing in this way. And I'm just really proud to call you a friend. And thank you very much. And of course, you have my full support. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Council President. President Pro Tem, Councilwoman Travis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very proud to support the Honorable Francis Flaherty, who also came, like he mentioned, that he came from Ward 6. But everything he has done when he was a mayor, he was an excellent mayor. Everything he's done, he worked very hard. I'm very excited about him being involved in this because of the fact that he started it when, you know, way back when he was mayor. So you definitely got my support, and I know you'll do a great job.
Thank you very much, Councilwoman.
You're welcome.
And back to the committee. Councilman Ricks.
Oh, just want to say briefly, thank you for your service.
Thank you very much, Councilman. Councilman Ricks was an intern in the Supreme Court, what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago? So I used to see him from time to time as he was hitting the books.
Yeah. Wow. It was quite a while ago.
It was quite a while ago.
2014 now.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. As a few of the gray heads on the council can tell you, the longer it gets, the quicker the years go. So,
why is everybody looking at me?
I'm not looking at you.
Councilman Sinapi.
Obviously, in full support of this, though I am still bitter. You're not still on the Supreme Court. You're obviously missed there. And for those who don't know, he has a very, very, very long record of public service, not just elected, but also militarily. So thank you very much for your service.
Thank you, Councilman. Thank you.
Councilman Foley.
I also am in full support of this and want to thank the Honorable Francis for all his service. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Councilman Lattiser.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Good to see you, Your Honor.
Good to see you.
The last time I saw you, I think you were out raking leaves in the front of your house or something.
I was practicing for this commission. I thought I might get on it someday, so I was out there practicing.
Well, I also have to commend you for wanting to do this. And I don't know, I kind of get the feeling you're trying to protect your interests above ground. I think it's what you're looking to accomplish here.
Yeah, well, but I don't have much interest anymore, you know. Most of it's behind me, so.
No. I mean, staying above ground.
Oh, I'd like to stay above ground for as long as possible, yes.
Again, Your Honor, thank you for all your service. You have a very distinguished military service as well. Probably not everyone is aware of that. Very distinguished service. And I've known you for a very long time, and it's always been a pleasure with our conversations, and wish you all the best in your new choice of time. It's a wonderful, wonderful commission, and you're going to be working with some really, really good people as well. So thank you for continuing your service. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Councilman McElroy.
Yes, good evening, Your Honor.
Hi, Jim.
How we doing?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. I would feel much better if we were in person tonight, because I always like to see you and talk to you. You have been a friend for a long time, and all I can say is accolades are put on you. You are without a doubt one of the best persons I've ever met.
Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
All I could say is I would like to talk about some miscommunications, misstatements that were talked about earlier. As I recall, you were a councilman from Ward 4.
No, Ward 6. Ward 6.
Well, I'm trying to get you. I'll always say you were in Ward 4.
Well, you know, in the 6 years thereafter, I was in Ward 4 a lot. In fact, that we did that Connecticut project. First project I ever did was Jonah.
Yeah.
Well, I was still on the council then, but yes, I liked all the wards.
and all the wards like you also.
Well, thank you very much.
And all I can say, congratulations, and goes without saying, I will wholeheartedly support your endorsement.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Chairman. And I just wanted to say also that it'll be an honor tonight to vote for you, Your Honor. And as always, thank you for continuing your long and honorable service to the city. It means a lot.
Well, this is a great place. This city's a great place. So thank you.
Agreed. Thank you.
All right. I don't want to skip anyone. Any other? Are there any members of the council left who haven't said anything that they'd like to? We do have a member of the public, Ms. Malcolm.
Oops. Hello.
Hello, Ms. Malcolm.
I am the chair of the Warwick Historical Cemeteries Commission. And as such, we are honored to have Justice Flaherty join us. That was all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, I monitored the meeting the other night on the, you know, they had a meeting. Yeah, and listening to Ms. Malcolm run the meeting, I said, oh my God, she's tough. What am I getting myself into here? They're a busy group.
Yes, we are. And I think the good part is everybody that joins because they want to. You know, they are there because they believe in what they're doing. And we don't care about ticks. We don't care about poison ivy. We don't care about the dirt. We just do what we do because we love it. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public wish to make a comment? If you would, please just raise your hand in the Zoom application. Seeing no others, Your Honor, any other final words?
No, I'd just like to thank the council for your kind remarks. And, you know, I sat for a number of terms where you sit. I know how difficult the work can be and the important work that you do. And I thank you for your endorsement. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I get a word in? Sure. The mayor wants to say something.
I don't have a seat over here. I just want to say what an honor it was when the judge contacted me about a month ago. We didn't know we had an appointment. He just wanted to get involved, and he asked who to contact. And I knew we had an appointment coming up. I called Peggy, and she was thrilled. And this is just a big honor for all of us. I don't know if I'm going to get my seat back, but
this seat gets warm at times, so. Thank you all very much, and I look forward to working with the commission and working with you as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, I think we have heard from everyone. I think we have a lot of support for an excellent candidate for this for the Historical Cemeteries Commission. So without further ado, do we have a motion?
Move to confirm.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Your Honor, welcome to the Historical Cemeteries Commission.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Night.
Good night.
Good night. Okay.
Congratulations.
Let's get a mute on there. Okay. Thank you. Where we hear the Coors Light can pop. All right. Next up this evening, an appointment to the municipal court. Justice Kelly McElroy, Council President. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask that we pause on this. Judge McElroy is teaching a law class as we speak, and she will be in class until 8 o'clock. So she would like to be present and speak to the council for consideration of reappointment. So she asked if we could pause the committee when her name comes up, and then we will go about our business. And then when there's a time available later on in the evening, if we could come back and she would join us virtually as she would like to address the council. So if that works for the committee. Okay.
Thank you.
So we will, if you could just make a motion to suspend, to hold on the committee, and we will reconvene.
Can I have a motion to recess the appointments committee until such time?
So moved. We resume. Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Great. Thank you very much. And then just to make an announcement for everybody watching, at this time, we still have one more committee of public safety, but I am going to ask if we can hold on in public safety at this time. I think we have a very important discussion at the start of the 7 o'clock meeting. So I'm going to ask that for the next 4 minutes that we take a break. And then at 7 o'clock, we will start the full council meeting where we will do it, a welcome, the general communications, acceptance of minutes. And then we will go, I will ask that we move up an item right to the top. So that is the plan for now. We will see you back at 7 p.m. for the full city council meeting. Thank you.